The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. So much to get through today. Fear not, though. Shaka Hislop will be by my side throughout. We'll start in the Premier League. It turned out to be a great day for Manchester City. They didn't even have to kick a ball. Of course, a horrendous 0-0 draw between Chelsea and Manchester United. Leicester, meanwhile, losing at home against Arsenal. Liverpool, though, with a win, beating Sheffield United. Well, for more on the Prem, let's welcome in, shall we? Nader Manua is with us, as is Frank Leboeuf and Jurgen Klinsmann. Nadim, this was terrible, horrible match. And what was interesting is that the most important thing we're talking about is a penalty decision, which was controversial, which you could talk about. But what's made this more interesting is the comments that we've heard from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer after the game. And just in a bite-sized way, he came out and said, well, Luke Shaw actually said it before, that the referee told Harry Maguire he couldn't give the penalty because it would have caused too much of a fuss. It would have been too controversial. Ollie then was asked about it, doubled down on that, and also then went on to blame the Chelsea website for bringing to the attention of the officials that Harry Maguire needs to be kept a special eye on. This all sounds ridiculous Twitter conspiracy theory being played out in a real footballing world.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And as a Blue, I'm quite enjoying it. I think for me, it was a penalty. I think it was a penalty. But I think some of the stuff which they're saying around sort of referees being pressured and so on, I don't really buy into that. I don't buy into it at all, because I think once you start believing things are going against you because people want City to win a title or whatever, I think you're missing the point. I think if they played better today, they probably would have won the game.
It's a nice smokescreen, isn't it, I suppose, Frank, overall, to take away from what was a poor spectacle. Manchester United not really testing, Chelsea neither. However, when it comes to this penalty, where do you stand on the reaction after it as well?
Well, first, you're right. It wasn't the best entertainment of the weekend and from far. Defensively, what is interesting, the first half was interesting also tactically, but it's true that offensively, we saw almost nothing. And we saw almost nothing because I think people are, I don't know, it's like they don't want to take any risk, like they're going to get the draw and the nil-nil that we have every time two big teams are playing against each other. After... Well, I think there is a penalty. I think Hudson-Odoi touches the ball with his arm. I first thought it was Mason Greenwood, but if you see on the replay, it's clear that he touches. So I don't know why the ref doesn't give a penalty, which doesn't mean that Manchester United would have won the game, because I think you are like an hour and 10 minutes before the end of the game. And that's completely stupid what he said after, especially saying it to the Manchester United captain very loudly to make sure that everybody's going to hear it. So you're going to create another story the other way around. So not saying that you're not giving a penalty because people is going to talk about it, you of course create a bad story. So I think, as Nidum said, it's all allegation on the fact that the referee is going to go on any club's website, you know, to check if there is a kind of influence to against Manchester United. I mean, that's all, you know, bad story. You know, go back to business, just work, just try to play, and just try to score goals. You know, that's stupid what we hear.
What a mess.
It's an absolute mess. It really is on so many levels. First of all, let's just, Sydney, as we sit here, as far as we know, the referee said something to Harry Maguire that's been repeated by Shaw and then Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. We're not exactly sure what the referee said in his own words. We haven't heard from Harry Maguire, at least I haven't, in his words as to what the referee said. So now we're taking this as a kind
like
of...
telephone back
It really is ridiculous. While I thought it was a penalty, I could see why there's doubt. All doubt maybe came into the referee's mind, and then it comes down to interpretation. All that being said, this was a dour game, as you rightly point out. Neither team did enough to warrant 3 points. And more amazingly for me, especially somebody who's played football through the 90s, when Manchester United under Sir Alex Ferguson were so dominant, and there was nobody better at influencing officials, the opposite team's managers, the opponents, than Sir Alex Ferguson, to now sit here and listen to a current Manchester United manager complain about what Chelsea have on their website. This really is turning into comic book stuff. When this is what we're discussing, when we're discussing the two of the biggest clubs in world football and the most dour of 90 minutes that we are yet to witness.
Jürgen, what do you make of it all?
I had a coach at one point, Otto Rehagel, always said, you know, whatever you say before, during, and after the game on game day is irrelevant. Because of there are so many emotions into it, there's so much at stake, you know, don't take it too seriously. And it's obviously stuff that comes out of their mouth right after the game, and they look at those images, and both coaches today know exactly that they hadn't had their best day, and none of the teams deserved 3 points in that game today between Chelsea and Man United. So overall, I think Man United is better off with that tie because they're trying to keep them at a distance. It's all about the Champions League spots now because Man City already ran away. They have the title already pretty much on their hands. And so all these things, you know, I think nobody talks about it tomorrow anymore.
Good luck with that. The problem is, like, this isn't an anomaly. In these big six matches we've seen all season, they have been forgettable once the full-time whistle has gone. Manchester United have featured in five of these games.
I just said that this game was the most dour we're ever to see and likely to see. I stand corrected. There's quite a few on that list that were just as bad.
Any of these
goodness me, those
shocking them.
As you look down this list, those games were just as awful as this one. Goodness me.
Nathan, five of them have involved Manchester United. How much would we read into that?
It depends. It depends if you're a United fan or not. I was recently speaking to one of my friends about that exact thing. And he's saying, yeah, they always set up to not lose now. This is a different Manchester United, but I don't know. I guess for me, if you're playing a game at the top of the league, you'd like to think that the two teams would be quite evenly matched. Obviously, we hope for goals because there's a lot of attacking talent on the field. But you're right, the games have been very, very boring. And it's a shame because we still feel like we've got an exciting game coming up. But to be let down as many times as we have been recently, it really is a shame.
Frank, how much do you attribute this to the lack of fans in the stadium, where it's easier to not to play to not lose than play to try and win?
A big amount. I mean, it's for me sure that with fans, all those games would have been different. And because of the pressure that you have, because of the push that you can get from the fans, you know, when you play at home, and the different atmosphere that you can get during the game, and that's for sure that those draws just show us that the pandemic have touched the football dramatically. In terms of level, big clubs don't produce what we are expecting. We make those games being big games where we don't have the atmosphere around, we don't have, therefore, the pressure, therefore, we don't have the results. And that's simple as that. So we need the fans as soon as possible back into stadiums to make sure that we have big games. That's for sure.
I disagree. I think even when we had fans, you saw so many of the big teams coming up against each other, and we have these kind of dour affairs. With or without fans, we've had to endure that over the last couple of seasons. The one thing that jumps out at me, and you talk about Manchester United, and I think in the sixth game, which was Chelsea-Spurs, you have teams in Manchester United and Spurs who are very much counter-attacking teams and pretty much don't know how to and don't try to play anywhere else. When you have an opponent, in this instance, Chelsea, whose focus is on taking away that counter-attacking threat, you get exactly these types of games. United, who don't offer much more, a team who are more worried about the counter-attack than their own attacking prowess, and you get 90 minutes that you'd much rather forget.
Jürgen, what do you think? Do the lack of fans have any influence
Dan,
on this?
Sorry.
Go on, Frank.
Sorry, I just want to say something to Shaq. I can accept that one game, you know, you don't have what you expect. And the Chelsea-Tottenham was exactly what we don't want to see when we are fans. And maybe we could have had that with the fans. But do you think that another game with the fans, you know, against Manchester United, the same type of game where the home team doesn't want to attack because they don't want to lose, they wouldn't have the pressure of the fans say, OK, now we're fed up, go for it. And that's maybe why I'm talking about the importance of having the fans in the stands.
That's fair enough. I still think, just given these teams, exactly as they're constructed right now, I don't think we get that much of a difference with fans in the stadium. Though I do accept the point that, particularly, we used Chelsea and Stamford Bridge as today's example. If the Chelsea fans are there today, I'm not sure they accept Chelsea just sitting back themselves and not offering a whole lot going forward. But as I said before, we've seen this happen with fans in the stadiums.
Jürgen, what do you think?
Can I say something as well? Yeah, I was going to say, if we talk about fans affecting the team, another thing we need to pay attention to is the fact that although Solskjaer believes the referee might have been on Chelsea's website, I bet you would have heard 40,000 Chelsea fans telling it's not a penalty today. And that probably would sway a decision more so than just three or four players on the field telling them it's wrong.
Oh, and he wouldn't have heard the referee.
Yeah, and Harry Maguire.
Harry Maguire might not have heard it.
Who knows what Harry Maguire would have
heard. I'm not giving that. I'm going to ask Jürgen a question now. Everyone else, shut up. Jürgen, what do you think?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, first and foremost, you know, managers are measured by the results, you know, and there's definitely a trend there where the managers say, you know, first, I need to figure out, you know, how I defensively, you know, I have a very, very good shape and look really good. And then I have to kind of put the attacking pieces together the way it best suits the style that I prefer. So there's a trend obviously out there that, you know, the counter break, the transition football has a high right now that a lot of coaches actually look for counter breaking the counter break, you know, so meaning the transition side of it is really, really important to them. And it has, as a consequence, is that teams rather kind of sit back and wait for that moment to kill you with a very good fast break. I mean, we've been watching Inter Milan over the weeks, you know, with Lukaku and Lautaro Martinez is a great example of doing that. So at the end of the day, the coaches look at the results first and foremost and make sure they keep their jobs, because if they lose three games in a row, then maybe they lose their job. Mm. And therefore, there is this trend. And it's also an international trend. I mean, the Premier League, I mean, we cannot talk about the Premier League for 20 or 30 years ago with the amazing energy, obviously, given by the fans, which is a huge point. I totally agree there with Frank, that you have the fans and they push you forward. You're going to go forward. There's no other way you can do it. You know, otherwise, you know, they boo you off the field, you know, after 0-0 like we saw today there between Chelsea and Man United. But it is an international trend that you have managers coming from more Latin-driven countries, you know, like in Italy, Spain, Portugal. They have more that in their blood. It's for them, it's a normal thing to organize first everything defensively and then see, you know, how can I make the difference going forward? And that gives you maybe a little bit more 0-0 games like we've seen now in the last couple of weeks.
No goals at Stamford Bridge, plenty of though in the Tottenham game, beating Burnley by 4-0. And Jürgen, of course, the big story here, Gareth Bale starts. Gareth Bale gets 2 goals and assists as well.
And that's huge. I mean, that's huge. And it's also should be given a big compliment to Jose Mourinho, because he obviously was confronted with the Gareth Bale situation over the last couple of weeks and months, and it almost made everybody made it look like he's not giving him his chances, but he slowly got him fit, he got him back into shape, and Gareth, to his credit, he stayed quiet, he stayed focused, and he took the minutes that he got on the field and got the most, tried to get the most out of it, and now he's looking much, much sharper, he looks much fitter, and you can see that, and the second goal he scores today is a beauty, and therefore, you know, gotta give him a lot of compliment.
Nathan, it's March though. Is it somewhat naive of me to say, couldn't you have done this a lot quicker?
I wouldn't say he's naive, no. But from speaking to, well, from hearing what Mourinho was saying recently, it sounded like Bale wasn't at full fitness and he wasn't fully there mentally as well in terms of dealing with his injuries. So it, obviously I wouldn't necessarily expect him to be who he is today from back then, but it seems like slowly but surely they've brought him further and, well, closer towards being up to speed. And up to speed, Gareth Bale in the Premier League is going to be very, very effective. You look at the assist and the two goals, and he's somebody that can definitely affect the game in a positive manner for Spurs. And the timing is great for them, to be honest.
Yeah, the timing's nice, Frank. I get it. But you've spent a lot of money on this player to bring him in. And it seems slowly but surely we got him nicely. What? Are you a professional footballer? Surely you'd be fit. You should be ready to go.
Well, I don't live every day with Gareth Bale, so I don't know what happened, and I'm not in the dressing room to know if Mourinho was right to put him on the bench instead of putting him on the field. Right now, what he does with Bale is quite all right, and maybe he has the right and he deserves to be now on the field. But my question is why Mourinho is now changing his tactic from being very defensive to be, and now it's almost over, well, it's over for the title, but it's maybe also very, it's going to be very difficult for the Champions League. Why is going offensively now? Four players offensively, well, almost five with Ndombele. Why didn't do that before? We criticized him, you know, for six months, because he was too defensive. And now because it's over, it goes offensive. Why?
Nathan?
To be honest, I think if he went defensive against Burnley at home, I think there'd be a lot more questions asked as opposed to why is he going offensive against them. I think he's probably trying to do it on a game-to-game basis because I think it was not too long ago they played against City and they were quite defensive. But then I think it was the weekend before, I think they played against Everton and they were very offensive and they lost the game. So I think he's trying to manage it. And I don't know if it suits his personality to go all out, but he's more than capable, especially when he has that front four in play because they can win a game against absolutely anybody.
Meanwhile, Liverpool, do you want to do your boring Spurs stats?
No, it's fine. No, yeah, no, carry on.
You sure?
Yeah,
trust me, you're not missing out on anything. Meanwhile, Liverpool were in action against Sheffield United, and they'd win by 2-0. Plenty of players missing that we know. Nathan, what do we take away from this game?
Absolutely nothing. Good. Nothing whatsoever.
Right, back to your Spurs stats.
You're basically in a position whereby if you lose the game, the crisis is next level. Because it's an expectation they're going to do so. Like, let's be clear, Sheffield United, for as much as they're working hard, we've got 11 points and it's March tomorrow. So we're not exactly going to say that in this moment you can't call them a good side. So even a depleted Liverpool side coming in and still, they're essentially still reigning champions. You expect them to be able to beat a side like this who essentially don't have any form to show up whatsoever.
Liverpool fans, Nathan, will be saying, but wait a minute, we've got no goalkeepers, no defenders, yet we still go out there and get the job done. Surely that's what we can take away from this game, that we have won a match, our first in five, with all of these problems.
No, not for me. I think when you have a team who, within the last 2 years, have won a Champions League and a Premier League, I don't think they're going to be taking strength from beating a team who are essentially going to be relegated within the next 30 days, I imagine. I know you can try and be positive and all this stuff, but the fact of the matter is, it's an expectation they will win that game. Sheffield United haven't shown anything to suggest that they could win that game. And even though Liverpool do have players missing, they still have their fabulous front three. They've got a good midfield. They've got the fullbacks in play. So that should be more than enough. And it turned out to be just that.
Liverpool fans, stop searching. Nathan isn't on Twitter. Sorry.
Yeah, for a reason. Just for that reason right there.
Frank?
I think it's not a performance, of course, and it's normal to win against Sheffield United, but I think lately Sheffield United caused a problem to some big teams. I just think about that team, Liverpool. I think it's the 18th times that they changed the central defence. Well, maybe they didn't need it against Sheffield United, but he says the amount of problems that they've been through during that season. So it's not that I'm trying to find excuses to Klopp and to that team because some of the players weren't very efficient this season. But you can analyze and you can maybe find a conclusion to the season that they have. And they're still there. They're going to play Chelsea at home very soon on Thursday. Mm. And if they win, they're going to be very close and maybe can qualify for the Champions League, which is, you know, kind of a... I wouldn't say a fit, but quite something good for Liverpool with the season after what they've been through.
It's going to be 0-0. Meanwhile, Leicester in action against Arsenal. Leicester starts the game brightly in this one, Nathan, but Arsenal get themselves back into it.
Yeah, when Leicester took this lead, I thought it was going to be a long day for Arsenal. But to give them credit, I think they hung in there. They worked hard, they played well, and they scored some very, very important and timely goals. And then by the end of the game, they looked very, very comfortable. And I think we're going to have to start asking some questions off Leicester now, because after being knocked out in the Europa League in midweek, to then see them in this situation now, losing after taking a lead at home and with the players that are currently missing for them, is this going to be the sort of deja vu in years gone by, essentially, where they run out of form at just the worst possible time? Well, if it's going to be like today, I suppose you'd assume it would be.
Well, this is it, Nathan, isn't it? Because you mentioned deja vu, and it's exactly what happened last season. Pretty much everyone had them written in as a team that would finish in the top four, yet they're in third at the moment. Obviously, West Ham, Chelsea, Liverpool, Everton, Spurs, all behind them, looking to close the gap. They've got so many injuries for the last third of this season. Obviously, as you mentioned, not in Europe, but where would you put their top four chances today off the back of that performance?
I think you still have to believe that you can be in there. I think they do still have enough talent out there as well to be able to go on a consistent run, but it's just ominous when you're seeing Chelsea and you're seeing Liverpool just right behind you. Because yes, you can essentially beat them. You can beat anyone in the top, in the traditional top six and so on. But to be extra consistent at this point now with certain players missing is going to be very, very difficult. But, you know, you're in there now and it's something to celebrate. You deserve to be there. So there's no reason why you can't do it. But as I say, for me, I just feel they might fall out again.
Frank?
Yeah, it's going to be hard, and I hope that nothing is going to happen like season. Their players are missing. And I think I've been talking a lot about Wesley Fofana lately. And he didn't play in Europe. He didn't play that game. So I guess he's missing a lot in the central defense. And to play, in order to be good in counterattack, you have to be first very good defensively, which wasn't the case today. And it was a perfect game. You know, they started, they scored after 8 minutes with Tielemans. And after, you know, they didn't play the way they play, they normally play. But because they weren't strong in the central defense, strong enough. So we'll see. I still put them in the fourth spot, but it's going to be hard. And they're going to have to react very quickly.
12 matches to go, Shank. Who's your top four?
Right now, I'm really concerned for Leicester City. And for a couple of reasons. You saw both these teams play in midweek in Europa League. You saw both managers make, what, four and five changes, respectfully. But you felt this was a stronger Leicester team that Brendan Rodgers put out in midweek in the Europa League. Clearly, his focus is on the league. Arteta's is the opposite. Yet still, and despite the start, you saw how Arsenal just took over that game and dominated. That was concerning. Equally so, added to the issues that Brendan Rodgers already has in terms of injuries, Barnes and Evans have to get substituted. That is a real concern. That if this is the best version of Leicester City right now, and now you still have to go without Barnes and Evans for a significant portion of this season, that four-point buffer looks a whole lot smaller. With Liverpool and Chelsea playing this week, I'll wait for that. Can I wait?
No, you can't wait for that. Shall I ask you now? Give me a long answer, which I wasn't really listening to. Lots of injuries.
I'm not really ready to give my answer yet, so I was trying to work.
It's obvious.
All right, I'm going to go the two Manchester clubs.
Right, good.
I'm going to go Chelsea.
Yes.
And I'm going to go Leicester City to finish fourth. I'm not going to jinx West Ham.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much. Frank will be joining us later to talk Ligue 1. Meanwhile, Nathan will be joining us on Extra Time, which you can always check out over on our YouTube channel. Who knows? Shaka's pick for the top four will be by that stage.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
What a game it was in Italy on Sunday. AC Milan beating Roma by 2-1. Milan, much better side in the opening exchanges of this game. They'd have to wait, though, just before the break to get the opener. It come from a penalty spot. The ref going over to the monitor and giving the spot kick after the foul from Fazio. Roma, though, getting themselves back in the game. Verratti with a great goal to make it 1-1. But Rebic would score the winner halfway through the second half. And it'd be a big 3 points for AC Milan as we welcome in Jurgen Klinsmann and Gab Marcotti. Jurgen, what a brilliant game.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant game from both sides. I think the win is deserved for AC Milan. They played an excellent first 20 minutes, created chances, got two disallowed goals there, but they won the roll. Then Roma came more and more into the game, had a few chances themselves. And then obviously it was the penalty kick that opened up the score. I think it was a penalty. That's why we have VAR for and have another look at it. Then Roma comes back with a beautiful goal by Jordan Vertu. And they certainly, I think, the best player on the field made that second goal with Rebic. I think he's he had an outstanding game. Hopefully, you know, his injury is not too serious now. He came off then. But I think it's well-deserved by AC Milan. It keeps the title race going. It keeps it exciting. Overall, an excellent game by both teams.
What a statement from Milan, Gab.
Yeah, absolutely. People were doubting. People were pointing out, I think correctly, that it wasn't just the result that had dropped off. It's the performances that had dropped off. You know, they're coming off Europa League, where they kind of scraped by past Red Star Belgrade. And yet, here they are against Roma. And I think especially those first 20 minutes out of the gate, that you know, you knew they couldn't sustain it for the whole game. But they were smart about it. They peaked at the right times. They showed tremendous cohesion. And in the end, I think, well, as we saw there, a more than deserved 3 points.
Inter, the team to catch in Italy at the moment. Another win for them on Sunday, this time defeating Genoa by 3-0. Romelu Lukaku with a goal involved, in fact, in all three of the goals. Jurgen, when you take a look at this title race and take a look at how good Inter have been, the first thing you think of, isn't it, is Romelu Lukaku.
Yeah, it all fits at the moment. It all fits. It helps, obviously, that they are not in European competition anymore. They don't play the Coppa Italia. So they can only focus on the championship, and they're doing that really well. I mean, Romelu Lukaku is playing his maybe his season of his life in a certain way. He's enjoying himself. He's connected to everyone on the field. He's a great teammate. He lays the balls off if you need it, or he scores it himself. So overall, it's running really well for Inter. But AC Milan, as they proved today, they're still there.
Gab, with Inter earlier on in the season, it was a bit of a lottery. We didn't know what sort of side would turn up. What's changed?
I think what's changed is that he's found the right alternatives. He's always had that setup, that 3-5-2. But, you know, inevitably, I think when you're a manager, you try to... You try to say, all right, this is my best 11. This is how, you know, I would like the team to be. And then I'll make adjustments when I have to play in midweek. And I think he's had to rethink some things because his original setup, you know, earlier in the season, we saw people like Kolarov. We saw a lot more of Ashley Young. Christian Eriksen was tried out in attacking midfield. We saw a lot of Arturo Vidal. Now I think he has his midfield sorted. And Christian Eriksen is a part of that. Maybe not in every game, but in many games, he's going to be a big part of that. And this is a player who Inter were trying to shift, you know, as recently as January. Equally on the wings, you don't have this imbalance where you've got Hakimi really attacking, running at players on one flank. And on the other side, you're more defensive because he decided that he was going to reinvent Perisic as a wing back. And again, this is after somebody who, you know, who'd been pretty much kind of shoehorned into that, or he'd been pegged as a, say, oh no, Perisic is a winger, Perisic is a second striker, whatever. You realize those are just stupid labels. And he said, no, you can be my wing back. And Perisic said, okay, boss, how do I play wing back? And he learned the role. And so now you've got this wonderful balance of two attacking wing backs and Perisic and Hakimi. You've got the back three sorted. Skriniar, you know, he didn't feel he could necessarily play in a three. There was talk of shifting him. Now he's settled into the back three. And I think it's just a lot of work on the training ground, a lot of work putting in the hard hours, watching the players, helping them improve. And I think that's how he got it going. Will it last until the end of the season? I don't know, because I feel like so much of this team right now is dependent on Lukaku. And were something to happen to Lukaku, you know, then you're looking at Alexis Sanchez, who's an entirely different player. But with a fit Lukaku, they're clearly favorites.
How much credit should Conte get for this, Jürgen?
Oh, he should get a lot of credit. Obviously, he put the pieces now together. It takes time. It takes also a lot of observation on the training field. So he put a lot of work in there. I think it's exciting to see Christian Eriksen in the lineup, in the starting 11. And what he's done with some youngsters is very impressive too. I look at Bastoni, is one of the biggest defender talents in Italy right now. I expect him to be in the European Championship this summer. Barella is the sensation of the year. So there's some young Italian special talent coming out through the Inter side, which is very exciting, especially for the Inter fans. And so he found the right balance. And obviously Lukaku and Lautaro Martinez, they found each other. They have a blind understanding by now. Perisic is playing his role, however it suits best to the team. Hakimi, outstanding. So it looks all very promising and looks all good. And definitely the advantage is, as we often mentioned, you know, you don't have to run on three or four different weddings in a certain way, because you just can only focus now on the championship. You have no European football. You have no Coppa Italia. So it's all there for Inter to grab. It needs consistency. It needs a lot of hunger to go through the next couple of weeks. But I mean, it's exciting. You're 4 points clear and you have the big chance to finally win the big, big trophy again.
What percentage chance you give them of winning it, Gab?
Oh, I'm going to go maybe 65-70% at this stage. I mean, I do think Lukaku and Barella are two players who I think are really hard to replace. But then again, 4 points is a lot. And not playing midweek football is pretty huge, especially for Conte.
A lot more from Gab on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which, of course, drops on Monday. You can download that over on the website.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Juventus extremely poor on Saturday against Hellas Verona, only managing a 1-1 draw. Matteo Bonetti is with us, but Gab, I want to start with you. Obviously, so many injuries for Juve at the moment. You've got Bonucci, Chiellini, Arthur, Dybala, Morata, Cuadrado as well. Pirlo speaking after the game, got quite prickly, didn't he, when he was questioned about those he's brought in to replace those injured players.
Yeah, he was asked about, you know, why they set up defensively the way that they did, and he got into this whole discussion about could they have played a back four with this guy named Dragusin playing right back, and then on the debate, is Dragusin a right back, is he a center back, why did you use Chiesa and Bernardeschi in those roles, and he says, well, those are their roles. It's a side of Pirlo we haven't seen. I mean, these are really, really silly comments, and it's a side of Pirlo we haven't seen at all. We very rarely see him lose his cool. He most definitely lost his cool, at least by Pirlo standards. I think it's frustrated because Juventus are playing really, really, really poorly. I know Verona, we've praised them before. They're a good side, Juric, all this stuff. But that first 45 minutes was horrible to watch. And after they took the lead, you know, they, again, they played with fear. They didn't take the game to the opposition. And that's what Bielo was supposed to be all about.
So where's it gone wrong aside from the injuries? Well, according to Antonio Cassano, it started with the signing of Cristiano Ronaldo, saying Juventus signed him to win the Champions League, but they have had worse results since he arrived. They would have won Serie A titles also without him. It was the wrong project. For 120 years, winning was the only thing that mattered at Juventus. It is still an obligation, but they tried to change their skin with Sarri and Pirlo. Ronaldo has nothing to do with Pirlo's ideas. He will carry on scoring because he can do it even sitting. He cuts inside from left and can destroy the goal, and his headers are unique. Andrea wants to build the action from the back. He wants to press high on the pitch. Ronaldo can decide games, but he doesn't participate much. I think he did badly in these years unless they manage to win the Champions League. Matteo, what do you think?
I think Cassano actually makes some decent points there. They won 7 consecutive Scudetti without Cristiano Ronaldo. They went to the Champions League final twice and then realized they were missing that generational player like a Messi or a Ronaldo, who broke their hearts, by the way, in the last 10 years in the Champions League. So they go out, they spend more than 30 million euro net a season on the contract of Cristiano Ronaldo. The failure here has nothing to do with Ronaldo. He scored a goal a game. He's carried this team when no one else would show up. The failure is in the way that this team was built, that they went away completely from their DNA with Antonio Conte and Allegri, who are pragmatic managers, and especially Allegri, who can adapt to whatever the opposition's giving him, that they'll sit back if they need to. And they said, well, you know what? We're almost tired of winning this way. We want to play fun. We want to please the hipsters online. And we're going to bring in Maurizio Sarri, who feels like an awkward fit. You just see Sarri. He's not this stile Juve that people are talking about, the Juventus style, the slickly dressed manager on the touchline. And then you have a chain-smoking Sarri coming in, who's kind of like this anti-establishment figure. And it was always awkward from the get-go. We didn't see this Sarri ball that really we've only ever seen in one place, and that was at Napoli. And the team around Ronaldo was simply built poorly. You look at the midfield and you see Rabiot, you see Bentancur, you see all these midfielders that should not have any part of starting for a team that has Ronaldo to win the Champions League. I mean, just look at the midfield units that Ronaldo had behind him at Real Madrid when they were winning. World-class players in every single department, in the defense, in the midfield especially, the players that are supplying the balls forward, the perfect striker in Karim Benzema, who is a facilitator for Ronaldo. Ronaldo has nothing to do with the failure. The failure comes from above, the way this team was constructed, this nonsense that this is a rebuild. The only rebuild that can happen is when Ronaldo's left. And they can send away Ronaldo, they can get rid of his 35 million, whatever, a year salary. That's when the rebuild happens. You cannot be in any sort of rebuild that is disrespectful to Ronaldo, a once-in-a-generation type player that you brought in for that one task, and you supply him with this team. It's nowhere near good enough, and it's another season wasted for a player that was supposed to resemble this Juventus that could finally get it done. I know you need luck. I know you PSG, the five-year plan. It takes luck to win the Champions League, but this team is poorly constructed, end of.
Yeah, Gab.
I'm not going to disagree with the poorly constructed part. The reason they had to rebuild is because somebody's got to pay the bills, Matteo. It's not like there's a magic money tree out there. They took
right,
a colossal
gamble on Cristiano. Right, because they're still paying Sarri's contract.
They doubled
down. And why is that? Because it was a poor hiring.
All right, stop it with Sarri's contract. Sarri's a pauper. Obviously, appointing Sarri was incorrect, but Sarri's a freaking pauper compared to what Cristiano costs you. They brought in Cristiano. If you remember, they had 1 year with Allegri. I know there's a school of thought that says, well, if Allegri had only stayed, we would have a whole bunch of Champions League titles. Maybe, maybe not. It's not entirely clear why Allegri left. The fact of the matter is, they weren't good in Allegri's final season. They replaced him with Sarri, which was a colossal mistake. And now, all of a sudden, they have to pay the piper because they spent so much money. Cristiano, I think, it's really hard to assess how much he's worth in terms of actual dollars and cents. It's nearly impossible. But I think it's fair to say he's held up his side of the bargain. I agree with you, Matteo, about the players around him. But you know what? When you think you're clever, when you're like, oh, look, Aaron Ramsey's a free transfer. No, he's not. There's no such thing as a free transfer or Emre Can or Rabiot or guys like this. There's a reason you're stuck with this. There's a reason why you extend Chiellini off into infinity when he plays one game last season. You end up, or you bring Bonucci back. You end up paying for this stuff. You end up paying for the ridiculous contract you gave Gonzalo Higuain. And I'm not even going to start on Khedira, where you have to pay him to go away, or Blaise Matuidi for that reason. Somebody in the front office thinks he's a lot more clever, and he's playing with like Panini stickers. And this is this season is the result of that. It's trying to remedy the damage that was done.
One thing you can hear they both agree on, Jürgen, is the fact that Ronaldo has kind of upheld his side of the bargain.
Listen, I think, you know, the move from Cristiano Ronaldo to Juventus is a bigger picture move, you know, or was, because it was a clear signal from the Serie A as an entire league, you know, that they are serious to get back, you know, to where they were in the 90s, the best league in the world. You know, they did that big transfer with Cristiano, and he paid them back. He's performing, he's scoring goals. When now Juventus decided to make a change in his coaching approach, to make a change in his style, they want to play in the future time. Obviously, there are some issues to discuss. You know, does Cristiano really fit into this type of a team? Is it ideal for Pirlo's ideas, how he wants to kind of build this new Juventus over the next couple of years? The big question is, you know, the management of Juventus, you know, how much time do they give Andrea Pirlo to step by step modify all the little pieces in this puzzle that Matteo talked about, the individual pieces, to make it all happen? You know, it's not going to happen overnight, definitely not. But they're still in the Champions League, and if they win 1-0, then they go through. They're still in the Coppa Italia final, so there's still a lot to play for Juventus. So I think, you know, it's something that we cannot answer right now. Probably it takes 2-3 years to make to evaluate properly the work of Andrea Pirlo. I hope he gets the time.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The big story from Milan over the last week off the pitch was those controversial comments made by Zlatan Ibrahimovic about LeBron James. In a moment, we'll hear from LeBron, but first, this is what Zlatan had to say.
You like going to watch basketball?
Yeah. I liked a lot, and I mean, he's a phenomenal in what he's doing. But I don't like when people, when they have some kind of status and they go in and they do politics at the same time what they're doing. I mean, do what you're good at. Do the category you do. I play football because I'm the best in playing football. I don't do politics. If I would be a politician, I would do politics. That is the first mistake people do when they become famous and they come in a certain status. Stay out of it. Just do what you're best at, because it doesn't look good.
Nah, absolutely not. I mean, because at the end of the day, you know, I would never shut up about things that's wrong. I preach about my people, and I preach about, you know, equality, social injustice, racism, you know, systematic voting, voter suppression, things that go on in our community. Because I was a part of my community at one point and seeing the things that was going on. And I know the, you know, what's going on still, because I have a group of 300 plus kids at my school that's going through the same thing, and they need a voice. And I'm their voice. I'm their voice. And I use my platform to continue to shed light on everything that may be going on, not only in my community, but around the, you know, this country and around the world. So, you know, if there's no reason, well, not I won't say no reason, but there's no way I will ever just stick to sports, because I understand how, you know, how this platform and how powerful my voice is. And he can just ask Renee Montgomery, you know, if I would have shut up and just dribbled. Seeing that beautiful Black woman today, you know, be a part of a group where she's part of an ownership group now with the Atlanta Dream down in Atlanta. And it's funny he say that, because I believe in like 2018, he was the same guy who said when he was back in Sweden, talking about the same things, because his last name wasn't a certain last name, that he felt like it was some racism going on when he was out on the pitch. Right? He did say that, right? Yeah. I thought he said that. So I speak from a very educated mind. I'm kind of the wrong guy to actually go at, because I do my homework.
Your reaction, Shaq?
I find what Zlatan Ibrahimovic said striking on a number of levels. We're a week out from Zlatan making those comments to Romelu Lukaku with the Milan derby and the fallout as a result. And as LeBron James rightly points out, Zlatan, in his own autobiography, made mention of the racist abuse that he feels he was subject to in Sweden. So I'm not sure how or why he turns his around some years later and inexplicably drags LeBron James into it. At the same time, as much as we're talking about LeBron James, and the debate will rage on as to whether he's one of the best basketball players to ever strap on a pair of shoes, we're talking about a man who went back to his home community in Akron, Ohio, and opened the I Promise School that he mentioned, that caters to 300 kids from the lower socioeconomic status, providing for them an employment for their parents. So I can sit here and just as easily point out in my mind that I think LeBron is a far better man, a far better advocate for the Black community, a far better philanthropist, a far better standard bearer for equality than he is a basketballer. So if you want to say stick to what you're good at, I will say very much LeBron James is doing what he's good at in providing for these communities that are voiceless and disenfranchised. And his side gig is basketball. By that token, I just don't understand the position that Zlatan takes in criticizing somebody using a status or a podium that they've earned. I really don't understand why it is people feel that if you come from certain communities and you are successful in sport and you see the same criticism to Marcus Rashford, mm-hmm, and Raheem Sterling in our sport, in soccer, in football, that you are all of a sudden, because you have realized the success in your sport, you turn your back on the communities from where you came. And you are supposed to do everything in your power to disenfranchise yourself from those communities. When what you're seeing from athletes today in particular is no. They are keeping their focus very much on those communities and helping to uplift the next generation of LeBron James or Raheem Sterling or Marcus Rashford. And that for me is worth applauding now until they stop doing their work, the example they continue to set to all of us. I think it's admirable. Why you criticize that is simply beyond me, and I'd like to use stronger language to describe Zlatan's current position on that.
Gab, what struck me through this was that it wasn't an investigative journalist looking for headlines. It was a softball question that Zlatan turned into a headline.
Yeah, these are the mysteries in that go on in Zlatan's mind. You know, he's been dealing with the media for a long time. It was an absolute softball, as you said. I imagine the journalist was expecting him to maybe go back and make some joke about, you know, how LA had a king and now they have an emperor and ha ha ha, wasn't it funny when he went to MLS? And instead he took it in a completely different direction. Shaq, I think, very eloquently pointed out why it's absolute nonsense. In fact, LeBron as well, saying that, like, he's talking about stuff that he knows about. He's not going off into politics saying, well, I think our monetary policy is incorrect, or, you know, or our trade relationship with Japan. No, he's talking about something specifically that he's heavily invested in, that he's heavily involved in, that he has experienced. So why Zlatan would go off in this direction, I genuinely don't know. I imagine he's got PR people. I don't imagine that he ever listens to them very much. I chalk it up to a bad day at the office, and I hope that, you know, he comes out and either clarifies this or maybe reaches out to LeBron directly and kind of educates himself a little bit about this, because, yeah, this went down like a lead balloon.
Yeah, I was going to say, Matteo, how has this been received in Italy?
Well, probably not with the same amount of headlines that you're seeing here. It did have a feature on Gazzetta, which is the number one Italian media outlet. But it seems like this whole shtick of Zlatan Ibrahimovic now, it's becoming a little bit tiresome. Let's just call it how it is. What he said was tone deaf. Read the room. It was ignorant. He has no idea what he's talking about or what LeBron is doing, which is so much greater than just politics. And I thought LeBron laid it out pretty interestingly, because if you look back at that ESPN article, which describes exactly what Zlatan is talking about, that his last name isn't Svensson, and in Sweden he received racism that prevented him from reaching maybe the heights that he thought he would. So they're almost arguing about the same exact thing, but Zlatan's comments are completely out of touch and completely out of base, and honestly, he looks like the one that should just stick to what he knows about, because he knows nothing about what LeBron is trying to teach and the good that he's trying to do in this country. And, you know, with the arrogance, and I know that it's this whole character that Zlatan has, and a lot of it, okay, haha, it's funny, you're lying, you're this demigod figure, that's great. But when you start talking about these sorts of things that have real life implications, it stops being funny. And I think that a lot of people lost a bit of respect for Zlatan Ibrahimovic in the last few days. And one more thing, I think Milan maybe should put out a statement just saying that they support what LeBron James is fighting for, and that they don't back the comments of Ibrahimovic, who, by the way, is just going to go off to Sanremo, an Italian festival, during this crisis that they're currently having.
Yeah, this is the point, and I know, Gab, this was something that you wanted to bring up when we take a look at his schedule this week. You see him on Thursday going to the Sanremo Music Festival.
Yeah, and supposedly he's going to perform with Siniza Mihailovic, a duet. This is a commitment that he made before he extended his contract with Milan. And supposedly Milan didn't know about it because there was an NDA. Now it's come out. You know what? All of this is great. But yeah, I think you should show a little bit of responsibility and a bit of leadership. Now, it's a couple hours away. People have tried to deconstruct his movements, but there's no question. I mean, you know, most likely he's going to have to train by himself on certain days. It's not good. And I think he can weather the storm of pulling out. And, you know, in a couple of years, if he retires, he wants to go back to Sanremo and sing, and maybe even, you know, go and act Zlatan. I'm sure they'll happily have him back. But this seems entirely unnecessary and kind of pigheaded to me as well.
Just going back to the LeBron...
And there's COVID too, by the way.
Yeah, indeed. Just going back to those LeBron comments, Jürgen, what did you make of it all?
Well, I think that, you know, in general, I mean, athletes or, you know, people in the sporting world or artists, you know, they have the same responsibility like anybody else out there in the communities. You know, they have to speak up. They have to say what is right and wrong. And it's really, really important. And I think LeBron does that in a fantastic way over the last years, and makes it clear that there are many things are not okay. We should deal with them. We should discuss them. So the social responsibility of all of us being in the sporting world is there. You know, some make it a little bit smaller and some make it a bit bigger. Some make it more in the background and some more like LeBron is really good speaking up and telling people his thoughts and asking for change. And this is very, very, very important. And that's when we in Germany, I remember when I played they always wanted you to become the role model, to be as perfect as possible. And I always made it clear, no, nobody's perfect. We all make mistakes, you know. There's not the 100% person, but we have a social responsibility. We have to look after the people within our community, and we have to make the statements the way, you know, for making sure that the future is getting better and is working the right way. You know, I'm on a board since 30 years of it's called kind of to learn for the future, that makes sure that the World War II crimes and disasters are not forgotten. What happened there? It was a big burden on Germany, and it's still a big burden on Germany. You know, I built orphanage homes in Eastern Europe, and I have two boys and girls clubs in Germany, and brought them up. But those, everyone is responsible in his own little world to make sure that there's a respectful environment out there, that people, you know, treat each other correctly and work hard, that we have a good future, all of us. So I think it's just our own small world, our responsibility to do that, and LeBron is doing a great job of that.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In Spain, a huge win for Atleti on Sunday, beating Villarreal by 2-0, an own goal in the first half. And João Félix coming off the bench, scoring the second, quite an aggressive shushing motion as well after he scored, meaning Atleti 5 points clear at the top of the table. For more on this, let's bring in Ali Moreno. Ali, it didn't really matter how they got it done today. It was all about getting the win, wasn't it?
It's all about the fact that they stopped the bleeding, that they were leaking oil all over the place over the last couple of weeks, and they needed a win in the worst way, no matter how that win came. And so we're not going to judge how the win came, and let's just focus on the positive. The positive is, yes, you got 3 points. Yes, you won for the first time at Villarreal since 2015. And yes, you got Luis Suarez through the game without getting a yellow card. Another yellow card for Luis Suarez would have meant that he would have been suspended for the game against Real Madrid. Those are the positive. And João Félix, of course, finishing his chance, that's a positive as well. In terms of what the game was, Villarreal right now is sitting in their locker room thinking, how in the world did we just lose this game? They doubled the possession, they doubled the shots. Atletico Madrid was hanging on all over the place, all like having to come up with saves. They're hitting the post. There's pressure after pressure after pressure. And in the best moments of Villarreal in the first half, Atletico Madrid scores the goals. And in the best moments of Villarreal in the second half, Atletico Madrid scores the goal. Atletico Madrid wins this game, and it's sort of old school Atletico Madrid. It's sort of defending, be opportunistic, get a goal when you can, and that's about it. As for João Félix, I will suggest that whatever he was signaling to, maybe it's the benches, maybe you can hear everything that goes on in the stadium because there are no fans in the stands. Or maybe this is to Diego Simeone, who has been critical of João Félix. And his criticism, is backed up by the fact that he continues to make decisions to leave João Félix on the bench. He comes on the field, scores a goal, tells somebody, anybody, my speculation, Diego Simeone to, hey, keep it down, stop yelling at me, stop complaining about me, put me on the field because I can make a difference.
Ali Moreno, as always, thank you very much. As I mentioned on Monday, Real Madrid in action. They're taking on Real Sociedad. Real Madrid, even favourites, Real Sociedad, meanwhile, 11-4 to take all 3 points. And this Copa del Rey action midweek, Barcelona against Sevilla. Fascinating time. Remember, Sevilla 2-0 up going into that second leg. Barcelona, though, won that game at the weekend. That game live on ESPN Plus, 3 p.m. Eastern. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much, as always, for everyone who has been watching. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Nathan, Frank and Shaka will be here to answer your tweets on Extra Time. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you. I saw loads of tweets today, most about penalties and handballs and VAR. Shaka is here, as is Frank and Nadim. I'm sure, like most, people got a bit distracted during the Chelsea United game. Shaka, I caught you trying to buy some exercise equipment.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Definitely. Some sort of step weight.
I have no idea what you're doing. I was fully focused on the action at hand.
What were you buying?
I was fully focused on the action at hand.
It's all right if you're looking to get yourself 54 now. You're trying to obviously.
I was fully focused on the action at hand, Dan.
Nathan, what did you do to entertain yourself during the game?
I had a lot of sleep, to be honest.
Oh, yes. That's the way to do it. Frank, you've just been sending sweary WhatsApp messages.
Yeah, well, I didn't, but I wanted to, and I know you never answer, so I stopped doing that. But I was yelling at the players. Yeah, I was yelling at the players because I wanted to go. I wanted them to go forward, and I was very, very upset because, yeah, it was boring.
So, Nathan.
But I didn't do anything special. I was in my, was on my chair.
Oh, a nice chair. Nathan, Bale and Ali back in form, two back-to-back comprehensive wins, clean sheets and Leicester City with piles of injuries. Is there any chance for Spurs to finish in the top four?
Yeah, there's always a chance. There is always a chance. Whether or not they can be consistent enough is a different matter. I think with the front line that they have, they're always going to be in with a chance of winning any game. But there's a reason why they are where they are right now, and it hasn't necessarily just been injuries. So for me, there is a chance, there is hope, but sometimes it's the hope that kills you.
Right, what a lot of cliches. Will they finish in the top four, Nathan?
No, I liked Shaka's top four on in the May program, to be honest.
What was your top four, Shaq? Do you remember it?
Yeah.
What was it?
I'm not telling you. It was the two Manchester clubs, Leicester and Chelsea.
Okay. All right. Frank, is Tuchel being a little too pragmatic in his approach with Chelsea as far as tactics, or is he just still figuring the team out?
He's still figuring the team out. I think he hasn't got the right setup right now, and he's still seeking for who's going to be the best at front. You know, we saw Ziyech today playing more central, where I really think that he can serve the others being on the right side, like Mahrez for Manchester City. So if defensively Chelsea is really spot on, and I think Tuchel worked very well with that, offensively we still have the same problem that we had with Frank. They don't create enough actions and chances, and they don't score enough goals, and he's still looking for his first 11. But we still have to give him some time, so I think, to find the right setup.
Shaka, is there any truth to Ollie's claims that coach's comments, Klopp's last month, impact refereeing decisions?
You'll have to ask a referee that.
We don't have any referees on, so we're going to you.
So I'm the resident referee?
This is the person who wanted you. You were on IFAB.
Just to confirm, I'm the resident referee in the absence of referees.
According to Andrew Wing, he wants your opinion on this.
As to whether coach's comments, I'm going to go with a no.
Right.
There you are.
Nothing else?
What else do you want me to add? I don't know, I'm not a referee.
Okay. All right. Nathan, why is the FC crew so biased towards Manchester City as favourites to win the Champions League? Are they really that much better than Bayern Munich?
No, I think I would never say, in this moment, I'm not going to say they're better than Bayern Munich. But I think when you've won 20 games in a row, it's hard to not at least say you're part of the conversation to be one of the favourites to win the Champions League. And obviously the draw will come down, will make a big difference as well, but no, everybody's seen them play at this point, and when they're going, they're as good as anybody on the planet. So, with that in mind, why would you not say they're one of the favourites?
More bias from former Manchester City defenders. Let's go to Frank for a more objective view.
Well, there's nothing much to say, you know. Manchester City is the best team in the world right now, so they deserve all the credits.
I'd also like to point out, Dan, that Manchester City are top of my power rankings.
Oh, no one cares about that. Right,
I'm not finished. That says everything you need to do right there.
Right.
Tune in on Thursday for the latest edition of the power rankings.
Is
your welcome, world.
Have you got a sponsor for it yet?
No.
right. Is it bad sportsmanship?
Google algorithms sponsors my top 10.
Is it bad sportsmanship, Shaq? I think I said a bad word, and I'm going to say this again. Is it bad sportsmanship, Shaq? From Doug to take free kicks quickly before the goalkeeper is ready. Shaq, did you ever experience a player who constantly attempted this?
That's not bad sportsmanship. It's a part of the game. That's a part of the game as a goalkeeper.
Right.
You have to be switched on and aware of that, which I always was during my career.
So for you, the goal should have stood, even though the goalkeeper wasn't
ready? It should
ready.
Have stood, yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Nadim, do you agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm not part of the goalkeepers union, but if a goalkeeper is going against other goalkeepers, I can tell you for a fact, I'm going to go against goalkeepers as well. I think we're not just going to wait for them to be ready. If the referee says you can take the free kick, like take the free kick and try and gain an advantage, because it's a tough enough game anyway. So if you can find a little 1% to help your team out, you take it. They did. But unfortunately, they were punished.
Nenu, who was the toughest striker you ever faced?
Toughest. I think I've played against some really physical guys, played against some really technical guys, but I think the best ones to play against would probably be the ones who are actually quite intelligent. So for me, when I left City, playing against like a Sergio Aguero or, you know, just one of those like really intelligent prime time goal scoring types where the moment you look one way, they go the other. So I suppose in the end, I'll have to say Sergio Aguero, but there were quite a few that I played against who did keep me on my toes for the 90.
Frank?
Well, it depends on what you want to mean with toughest. Is it a dirty defender who's going to
Who was the player when you saw the team sheet, your heart dropped, you knew you were going to have a really tough game?
Well, I played against Ronaldo in the final of the World Cup in 1998.
But you had him in your pocket for that whole 90 minutes.
Yeah, but before the game, I tell you, it wasn't in my pocket, and it was more in my thoughts and in my nightmares than anything else. So I would say him. Yeah. Otherwise, Shearer. Shearer was a very tough striker to play against because he could be dirty. He was also absolutely fantastic player as well, scoring from everywhere. So yeah, you knew that against Shearer, you would have a very bad afternoon.
Nadim has his hand up. Nadim?
Yes. Sorry, I was trying to do. It's been the Zoom year, so you put your hand up, and then hopefully somebody comes to you. One that I would say, even though he's got a very good goal-scoring record in the Premier League now, one which was always really frustrating was the Jamie Vardy, because I think in his career when I played against him, he tackled me more times than I tackled him, and that was always very, very annoying.
Shaka, what about you? When a team sheet comes out, who were you like?
Oh, Matt Le Tissier.
Because you didn't know what was going
to
happen.
Yeah, he's the biggest nightmare to me during my own. I couldn't tell what he was doing. He could chip it, he could drill it, he could do whatever he wanted with exactly the same backlift. So I couldn't read him, could never figure him out.
Why do we sometimes see...
But Shaka, Matthew Le Tissier, sorry, Shaka, Matthew Le Tissier for me wasn't a striker. It was more a number 10 than a number 9.
I'm not good at numbers, Frank.
It was just a general question, Frank, that I was taking on from the initial question.
Frank takes this extra time very seriously.
Very, very literal.
Yes, he's a very, very extra time. He's short, not so much, but extra time.
It's from his acting ways. Tell him this is what it's going to be, then he's in character. He's thinking about strikers. He can't think out of the
improv.
Box.
Improv, Frank.
Exactly. It's a question. I'm answering to... I try to answer precisely to every question that Thomas is asking me.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Frank. But I think some of it comes from you being Oscar nominated.
Oh, okay. No.
Yeah.
I will sing a song. If I get an Oscar, I will sing a song.
But you tell me, say Frank is Oscar nominated, he just calms right down.
No, but you were in a film.
Whatever you say, Dan.
Frank was in a film that was nominated for an Oscar.
All I'm saying is Frank was rather aggressive.
Yeah.
Then you say Oscar nominated Frank LeBeouf. And he's like, oh, it's okay, Dan.
Yeah.
I understand. You could ask me anything.
Have you seen many of Frank's films?
Yeah, I've seen every single one of them, I believe.
Which
several
one's
times.
Your favorite?
The first one.
Ha 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 ha
Well done, Andy. You're very good.
Oh, goodness, we're right. Where are we finishing with here? Why do we sometimes see 11-man teams struggle to score against a 10-man team despite having the numerical advantage, Frank?
It's quite normal. You know, I remember playing 4 against 11, well, plus the goalkeeper, so 5 against 11 at training ground for like half an hour. And we have Vialli, Zola, Di Matteo, Wise, Mark Hughes, all the big players. They couldn't score a goal for half an hour. Wow. Because if you very all together, you can keep the clean sheet. And if you have a good goalkeeper, we had a good goalkeeper. We didn't have Shaka Islop, but we had a good goalkeeper.
This doesn't sound like a true story, Frank. For half an hour, it was 11 against 4 and they couldn't score.
It was Peter's second goal, that's why.
Because if Shaka can explain to you, if you stick together, you drop. Of course, you have to drop. You're not too far away from the net. You stay at the edge of the 16-yard box. And I tell you, it's going to be a nightmare for 11 guys to score against 5 guys. It's possible.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. You learned something new today.
There you are.
You learned something new today, Dan.
What did I learn?
That is hard.
You're looking for exercise equipment.
That is hard to score against 4 men.
That is it. Thank you very much, guys. ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Real Madrid in action against Real Sociedad. We'll be talking about that game and, of course, a lot more.